Hi, this is Dominic Pace, and you're listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Great pull, kid.
You found something.
You found the Rebel Base Card Podcast.
What a piece of junk.
I'm your host, Greg McLaughlin.
He is as clumsy as he is stupid.
Join me as we discuss Star Wars trading cards and card collecting.
We need a statement, not a manifesto.
We'll talk about sets from the original vintage.
No, the one I'm pointing to.
All the way to current releases.
This?
Yes.
All right, let's get started.
Commence primary ignition.
Welcome back, or if this is your first episode, welcome aboard. My name is Greg McLaughlin, and this is the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Big show for you tonight as we have part two of a conversation I had with the Marvel Card Collectors podcast hosts Ian Taylor and Noren Rad. We had actually recorded part one and released it on their episode 23 of their podcast. Tonight is part two, where I got to ask a few more questions, and quite honestly, I could have asked a bunch more and spent a lot more time because they were fascinating to talk to, and it's always great to talk about collecting cards, which is what we do. The funny part is just our podcasts do pretty much the exact same thing except different genres. They are Marvel cards, I'm Star Wars. And we'll get to that interview in just a little bit, but we did have a lot of housekeeping, and to be quite honest, a lot of these could be their own dedicated episode, as we've had so much content come down the pike. So much so, as I'm kind of looking, I actually kind of had to use a whiteboard here to kind of mark everything down. And just to give you the fact that I am not exaggerating, we have had the Mandalorian episodes 1 and 2 come out since the last time we talked. We did have our conversation with Dominic Pace from the Mandalorian, and he'll be appearing in episode 3, which comes out later this week on Friday. We also have Star Wars Topps Masterwork 2019 that dropped a day or so ago, and that's a huge release. I'll talk about this in a few minutes. We also have a Card Trader app major update that's happening on the 21st that's going to change the interface. We also have some cards that are hitting Topps now from The Mandalorian, and they're coming in chapters. And so as each of these kind of come down, I kind of had to start making columns and so forth to kind of try to remember what I was wanting to talk about. So basically, I'll kind of start from last thing to first. If you haven't had a chance to listen to my conversation with Dominic Pace, it was really an honor to get a chance to talk to somebody from Star Wars that's in one of these episodes, and he'll be appearing as the Bounty Hunter Gecko, like I said, in episode 3. If you haven't had a chance to listen to my conversation, there were some other podcasts he appeared on. I've actually had a chance to listen to Tatooine Sons, Steel Wars podcast, and I'm forgetting another one, but he actually appears on a number of them, and he was also interviewed by Daniel Lowe of Fantatrax. You can also check the show notes for the last episode that has links to all of those. And I recommend you check them out. It was a kind of a fun interview, and it's kind of fun hearing some of the other folks talk about their interviews. And on that podcast note, there are a lot of new Mandalorian-based podcasts that are coming within the same feeds. For example, the Cantina Cast has their own Mandalorian podcast, which is appearing in their feed. That's happening on Mondays. I know that The Star Wars Report, they're doing Star Wars Tonight, which they're coming out, I think, 3 days a week, and they're doing some Mandalorian-specific content, other podcasts, and like I said, there are so many now, but they're all really doing a good job, and, you know, it's fortunate yet unfortunate, because I know we have some countries out there that haven't gotten Disney Plus yet, and so if you're out there, I know that I do have some audience outside the U.S., I won't be talking about any specific Mandalorian spoilers because I know you guys haven't been able to see the program yet. You haven't gotten Disney Plus yet. If you're following a lot of Star Wars sites, kind of hard not to get spoiled to a certain extent. But hopefully you guys get Disney Plus soon. I know in the UK, I think you get it in March. And so it's not going to be too much longer, and then you'll get it. And then I think when we get into season 2, it's going to be a lot better for everybody because we should all be on the same page. But at any rate, yeah, a lot of good Mandalorian content that's out now. And oh yeah, by the way, we had Jedi Fallen Order that dropped on the 14th last Thursday. Technically, if you pre-ordered 15th for the rest of the folks, I did pick up my copy on Thursday night at 9 o'clock at my local GameStop. I'd actually pre-ordered it. Not much of a gamer, but I knew that there was a lot of good stuff in this story, and I kind of wanted to follow along. And unlike, say, Battlefront 1 and 2, which I did kind of wait for a while and it'd kind of pick up at a bit of a discount through the PlayStation that I have. This one I kind of wanted to see. I wanted to get it as early as I could. I knew that I wouldn't be able to play too much of it at the get-go, but I did kind of want to play along, and it was that sense of belonging, right, where you kind of wanted to be where everybody else is, where they're trying to get through, and you're talking to your friends at work or friends online, and you're saying, like, hey, I made it to here. I've seen this so far. What I can say is, so far, I really like it. I think I've gotten through the first chapter already. Cal Kestis has died incredibly under my watch. Like I said, not much of a gamer, but, you know, I used it. I even played at the easiest setting, which is more story mode. I know some people are doing it at the highest one, the Jedi Grandmaster, and some people like that. My son, who we're kind of sharing a disc on, you know, he likes playing it at a high level. He's a gamer. He kind of knows his way around. He's played. I want to say I've heard this is a lot like Uncharted or Tomb Raider. So I do like the combat in it. I do like the story, and the cutscenes are amazing. So when I do get a chance to play, and I think I've played a grand total of maybe a half hour, 40 minutes on it, it'll be something where I'll kind of come back to from time to time, take him through a chapter or so. This is not going to be one where I'm going to be able to sit down and dedicate a lot of hours, but I really kind of want to enjoy it. It kind of takes place at about the same time as The Mandalorian, so it's kind of this interesting... No, I'm sorry. I take that back. It takes place after Order 66. So you kind of have these areas where, like The Mandalorian coming a number of years after Return of the Jedi, you know, some areas that aren't heavily explored, and it is kind of fun to kind of go through, and you're seeing some vestiges of what you already know about, but you're already kind of, you're learning new characters, and it's kind of fun. So I'm kind of enjoying that. Like I said, a lot of this content could get its own episode, and we could talk about it for a while. Probably the biggest thing, though, for the card trader folks, or the people who collect cards, are this Masterwork set. This is one that a lot of people wait for during the year. It's a big hobby set. You won't find this in retail stores. And it's an expensive set as well. It retails, I believe, for about $175 for a master box. But the set itself is going to include, and I'm reading this off the big list, 100 base cards. Plus, they have parallels. If I go over to, you can check some of this out on Beckett's as well as the Cardboard Connection. But if I just go through the base set here, we're looking at 100 cards that also have colored parallels that are numbered. You have green to 99, purple to 50, orange to 10, black to 5, gold. There are gold one-on-ones, and then there are printing plates, which we have seen in other sets, which have, you know, black, cyan, magenta, and yellow. And these are characters that kind of seem to span the whole saga. These are thicker cards. They're 72 point. I've gotten a few of these recently when I was chasing the Adrian Edmondson cards. They're a little thicker than other cards. So like I said, this is more of a premium set. I haven't had a chance to really check and see if they work in the binder sheets, but I do believe there is enough room in there to get it in there. In addition to the base cards, I think something that appeals to a lot of collectors is that we have very nice higher-end autograph ones. We also have relic cards. We have film cells. We have, you know, straight-up autograph medallions. We have ones that have, there's a quad autograph book. Oh my gosh, that has four signatures on it. I'm kind of looking here. This particular one had Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Daisy Ridley, and Adam Driver. That's sort of a one-on-one, but that's pretty amazing. You also have some signers that you haven't really seen too much before. This is the Ewan McGregor. This is the Kelly Marie Tran. These are folks you don't normally see, and they haven't really appeared too much on the scene as far as cards. So it is kind of nice to see that. And like I said, a lot of these hobby folks go straight after these kind of cards, kind of, you know, bypassing some of the more retail-based series. You also have about 122 sketch artist cards that are out there. And like I said, these will be a lot of the artists, if you're following them, you've already seen on their Instagram channel how they have put out that they're on this checklist. And for some collectors, these are the ones that they want to gun after. So like I said, this is probably going to be a set we'll be talking about for a few weeks ahead, at least, as really the next set out is going to be the Episode 9 movie set, which appears later in December. So I think Masterwork is going to take up the breadth of the conversation, at least card-wise, for the next few weeks. And this is something to where you might start seeing some things pop up on eBay. You'll see some people probably pull some cards if you're following them on Instagram and so forth. And if you're following the sketch artist like I do, you'll probably see shots of their artist proofs or some of the things they're able to work on. They weren't going to be allowed to talk about this until the set dropped. In addition to that, we also have Topps now that is putting out cards for each of the chapters of The Mandalorian. And these are 5-card sets. They are $19.99 a piece, so it's a little higher than what you've seen for the trailer sets that had 10 cards for $19.99. But in this case, they're releasing these at 7-day intervals. So they're good. You know, these chapter sets are good for a week and week only. They're coming out in conjunction with the Living set. You know, the ones that are done by Chris Penix, as well as the Galactic Moments, the sort of the run up to Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker. So there's a lot of cards coming out right now, and so as a collector, I can see it being a little tough to kind of figure out what exactly am I kind of looking for, what do I want to collect, and what's the real strategy for it. And I count myself amongst those as well. I have been collecting some of the Living set cards. On occasion, I'm taking a flyer on the Galactic Moments one. That's been going on for a while, and since those cards, they were coming out in sets of three, or you could buy them individually, much like the Living set, where you could buy them as a 2-card set, or you could buy them individually. In between these sets, like we had Skywalker Saga, we had Chrome Legacy, we had Journey to the Rise of, sometimes they make for a nice filler, or if it's something to where I really kind of want to get that particular card, that's kind of been my strategy. I did get a hobby box for Skywalker Saga, as well as Journey 2, and so in some cases, those base sets were complete. Now, Masterwork being about a 175, that makes a little more of a pause for me. Some people really like going for that because of what they're getting per box, and I want to say if I go back to the Beckett's, let me see if I can do this on the fly. For the Masterwork hobby box, here we go. We had one hit per mini box, and there were 4 mini boxes per master box, which was the 175. 2 autographs per master box with 1 on-card autograph guaranteed. So like I said, this is a premium product. And this is something to where, you know, maybe I might save up a little bit and grab a box. I might see if some people put their base sets on eBay. I might just go after particular characters, just like I did with Adrian Edmondson, which where I wasn't necessarily going after the full Masterwork 2018 set. I was just going after particular characters. And that does kind of come into play when we're talking to Ian and Noren, the Marvel Card Collectors podcast, where sometimes how do you attack larger sets or expensive sets? Do you go after the whole run, which could be kind of expensive? Do you go after a particular autograph or a particular character? And so I think that's a great conversation as we get into the main part of our show tonight, something to kind of think about. So these are questions that I kind of am asking myself as far as how do I want to attack this? It's a large set. Do I want to go after particular people? So I kind of will be digging into this set as the days and weeks go on and kind of see how I want to attack it. Do I want to go and buy it local, which I generally like to, but that'll be a little more than if I got it online through, like, say, a David Adams or a Blowout Cards. And so these are just questions that, as a collector, sometimes it's very easy to click that yes and buy, but sometimes you may want to take pause and kind of figure out where you want to go. Do I want to get each of these chapter sets? Am I concerned as far as The Mandalorian? I want a physical set as much as everybody else does. Are these going to be the only physical set? Are they going to come out with a whole season one set? I really hope so. So it's one of those things where sometimes you just kind of have to take your lunch money and kind of have to figure out, okay, do I want to bring a sandwich today and buy a card, or do I just want to get that nice lunch? So that's just something else to consider. So lots of things on our plate, lots of things to discuss, lots of cards to kind of go after. And yeah, just briefly on the Card Trader app, a big interface change for them, which is happening on the 21st. I know it looks like there's going to be some maintenance on the 20th. So for those of us who've been playing this this app for the last 5 years, boy, a lot of things to consider as we kind of get sort of a shuffling the deck of our own collection. You know, we've kind of played the Card Trader app a certain way. There's been subtle changes, but this sounds like it could be a large change. And if you have tried out the Marvel Collect or the brand new Disney Collect app, which just came out also a few days ago. Same kind of card trading thing, but just different things and different ways to go about it. I know with the Marvel Collect and Disney Collect, you still get coins, you can still buy cards, there are still sets. But there are different things in there, and it seems like the app is a little stickier, kind of has to keep you in there. Unlike, say, if you go to, like, say, your Bunt or your Kick or your other Topps apps that you've maybe had for a while, where maybe you go in and just get your coins, maybe you grab a couple of packs and get out, do some trades or whatnot. So it does kind of seem like we might have to kind of rethink the way we kind of play this game. And that's not always such a bad thing. You know, sometimes people don't like if they come in and go, well, I don't know why you're kind of messing with my collection. But, you know, to be honest, as far as the Card Trader app is concerned, you know, sometimes when you move to the next year, like they've done cards each year, sometimes you don't even look at the cards you have, or you may be segregated out to where maybe you're only looking at the last couple of years. But when you're talking about hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of cards, how does one organize? How does one look at their collection? How do you store it? And you know, how do you enjoy it? So sometimes having this conversation of, you know, maybe I should kind of relook at my collection, because it really is about enjoying your collection, right? It's about wanting to enjoy it, not only the collection, the chase, as it were, but also just enjoying what you have as well. So those are some things just to think about. Like I said, each of these topics could have had their own show, probably deserving their own show, and I'm sure we'll be talking about this as the days and weeks progress. And it's kind of funny to think, as we get into the holidays, this would be naturally a time where you're kind of winding down, as you know, maybe guests get a little harder to get because of their traveling or their holidays or they're taking vacations. But we're going to have content really right up until about the end of the year, especially with the rise of Skywalker. So it'll be something to where, you know, maybe we'll all need a break after that, after we've seen the movie a couple, three times. But we got to push forward and try to bring you some great content. So we'll go ahead and get back and get into our main topic tonight, which is our conversation with the Marvel Card Collectors podcast team of Ian Taylor and Noren Rad. Once again, it was really great to get a chance to talk with them. Kind of a sister podcast, I kind of feel, because like I said, talking about collecting cards, just different genres. So I hope you enjoy this part two of it, and we'll be back after we get done. Does the fact that these cards that Marvel produces, you know, they're individual characters, maybe they're a theme. Do you think that the Marvel cards lend themselves better to be individually collected or around a particular character as opposed to a whole set?
You want to go first, Ian?
Well, I think you can go either way on it. I think there's enough sets out there, without getting into the territory of banned characters, as my buddy Norin will attest to, Silver Surfer not able to be in any Marvel card set for various reasons. That aside, you really can pick and choose. I think some of the bigger sets that are out at the moment for Marvel have that tier system in play, and because of that, it very much makes it okay. You can't get a master set unless you have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to drop on product, because you have one of one cards, you know, you'll have a red parallel of something that there's only one of. And it makes it so that certain people will just choose to collect a certain color or a certain level of tiers. Some people will choose just to go for what I guess you would consider to be the base. Some people might go for the more limited ones where they're red and there's only 99 of them. And you can kind of stop and start wherever you want to. So one of the things we find, and we tend to advise people, certainly on the Cards 101 episodes that we did, is you kind of choose your own adventure in a way on some of the bigger premium sets. Some of the older sets, you can go more all in because they weren't designed to be these sprawling kind of, you know, they kind of remind me of the
huge conquest,
the yeah. LA of sets, yeah. You know, rather than a small town with a corner store and a main street, you know, the small town sets, you can get, you know, all of those, which is why, you know, some of those 90 sets are actually quite nice and quite satisfying to get. Marvel Masterpieces 92 is 100 cards, incredible artwork, groundbreaking, genre-defining design, and set the format for years to come. And it's a beautiful set. You can get it in a tin with the extra lost cards, and you're done. you haven't got to pay $300 to get a hologram that there are only two of. That's really, really difficult to get. So it's really accessible. So I guess you can come at it from both ways. I collect a certain character, and as does Norrin here, and that is a rabbit hole you can get pretty deep without even going into collecting the full set.
Yeah, I think preferably what I would give new collectors advice on, or like if you're trying to decide what you kind of want to go out, one, you just go out what you like. You know what I mean? And it, you're just going to have to be okay with being frustrated sometimes, because there are pieces you're not going to be able to get. Like, you're just not going to be able to do a whole set of one of ones. That's not going to happen. People hold on to those things. And like we talked about in our episode with you, and I wonder, and it's a question I have for you guys as well with Star Wars. There are collectors who are not willing to be on social media. There are collectors who keep everything in their space. They're happy with what they have, and they don't really reach out or share or ever sell. So there's a lot of people who don't go that extra mile to sell things. I think you realize very quickly in terms of characters, if you're going the character route, what's already been picked up. I have like
black hole collectors. Is how we refer.
Yeah, black hole collectors. And you know, the cool thing about character collecting in either Star Wars or Marvel, I imagine, is that you can collect the sketches of one particular character. And that's a really cool thing to have a collection of, is just sketches of this one character from many different artists, from like a whole set. I think the possibilities are endless. I think the only downside is that if there is something you really want, you have to do two things initially. You either have to be patient to eventually when that collector moves on, or you have to be okay with not having everything.
Right. And I think, you know, I took a little bit of a cue from what you guys were doing in that, you know, as these sets, whether you're talking about a retail or hobby set as constructed, you know, they have, there's multiple autograph cards. There's multiple sketch artist cards. And so, yes, unless you drop a ton of money, you're not getting all of them. You're not having a whole collection of, unless, you know, you wanted to focus on this. But on the one hand, you're like, well, I'm kind of disappointed because maybe as a completist, you want everything. But then I went back to one of my current, you know, things, like I said, just kind of based on what you guys did, I went back and started looking for Adrian Edmondson cards.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to mention this.
This is completely on you guys to kind of got me going. I like the character anyway. I loved Vivian from The Young Ones. And it wasn't
so cool.
It wasn't through my first, I think I went through my first viewing of The Last Jedi before I realized who that was. And then I went back, and then you go, oh my gosh. And then the second and third times I saw it, I just, you know, every time I watch it now, I absolutely love it. And so there's not a lot of his cards out there. And so I got one of the Topps archives where it was also one of those, like it's an autograph. I think it was a buyback, and it was an autograph, one per box. And he had one of those, and I think he had a couple parallels, signature ones, where it was on the card. And then now I'm finding that they're, you know, Masterwork 2018 or 2018 had some of his cards in it, and so I got the different parallels of that. There is an expensive one that, you know, they start getting more and more expensive as you get to the more rare and they're numbered. And then I found that there was another autograph from another series that I'm like, okay, there's at least two variants of that. And so it's fun because you almost have this, oh, yes, and there's a relic fabric card of the same type of fabric that used for his uniform. So I have this micro collection. I have nowhere to display it, but it is fun to kind of go. It's fun to chase after that to go, well, now I don't have to necessarily worry about getting the expensive Masterwork set, because that's a real high end set. But anytime I see him, and there won't be that many, it'll, you know, I don't even know if he'll be in The Rise of Skywalker. I would go over the moon if he was, but I think more Rian Johnson's thing that they got him for that. But it makes it fun because then you go, well, there's not that many cards. It's a fun little one. And even some other collectors are going, what is it with this guy and you? And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But I think it is something to where.
Well, you've got a rainbow.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you can't beat that. I don't know. For me, that's amazing. Like when I got all four of my printing plates of all different colors of Surfer for the MM16 Joe Jusco set. Like, once I got the four and I had a color of each plate, I was like, that's it. I got a full rainbow. I'm happy with this. This, for me, that completes the set. You know, right. that is, you know, and I think what's really fun about being a character collector is that at one point, you get a certain card after getting so many, and you realize, oh, now I have to go all the way because there's no one else who can do this but me. As egotistical madman as that sounds, but it very much is true where you're like, oh, I'm this far in now. I can't kind of like look away. I kind of have to pick up the one of one. I got to pick up the alternate version, right? I got to look at these kind of differences and be like, all right, I'm this far in the collection. It has to be done.
it's the chase. I think that's it goes back to. I wanted to ask Ian, how far, either of you, how far does the Marvel comic, the Marvel cards go back?
1968, because you have the sticker album, isn't that right, Ian, or something like that?
Yeah, I think I get a bit hazy on the details because I'm not sure if I've got the interest to collect it, but I think there was a set in 66.
Yeah, that's it, 66.
And I'm not sure. I know very little about that, so it may well have been stickers. I don't know, but there was one there, and then there was one. I know there was a 1987 set that's referred to as Marvel Universe, that was by Comic Images. But then you had the first proper Marvel Universe titled set came out in 90, and it kind of really snowballed from there.
Well, funny enough,
smaller sets before then.
Yeah, funny enough, the for me, my Surfer collection starts at 1976, and it's actually released by Topps. And it was, like, for me, this is my definition. Other people have other definitions, because you have something called swap cards that were kind of like our sticker cards, where they weren't the actual standard size of a trading card, but they had the characters on them and people could trade them, so they considered them trading cards, even though they weren't the standard size. But the standard size trading card, for me, I think starts at the 1976 Topps, at least for my Surfer collection, and that was a sticker. And they had a UK and a US variant. And then I'm looking for the Topps vaulted card for that, because you know how Topps has that awesome thing they do where they keep a card that's for their archive set and then eventually they sell it or whatever. I don't know. I'm stuck on that. I can't find it. But I think 1960.
Never heard of that.
You've never heard of that?
Oh, tell me this. Yeah. Tell me about this.
What? Yeah, no, it's amazing. So, okay.
They
did
it for Star Wars as well.
I'm sure they have something for Star Wars for that, right, Greg?
They do have these buyback ones you'll see where they will go back and they will buy back a card and then they will either have it signed or they will put a stamp on it. And I want to say they were doing it for around the 40th anniversary where you had, you know, and then I think the archives were ones as well where they went back and got different cards from different times. You see a stamp on it and then you'll see an autograph on it, but very similar to these buybacks.
So yeah, they do exist in Star Wars then, because like for Marvel, they're called vault cards. Basically, they're the cards that they used as the printing example to do the set, and it's something that Topps held on to, and then eventually they sell those cards.
Oh, so they're not cards that have been issued and printed, and then they buy back, which
no,
I would do as well. So this is something even more limited than that.
Right. So it's like they have a set. It's like they make the first batch and then they're like, okay. So it's like if anybody's ever worked in like layout or graphic design or anything like that,
yeah.
It's you basically print something out and you're like, okay, this all looks great. This gets a seal of approval.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and start production.
So it's their file copy.
They're a file copy. That's the best way to put it. So yeah, so there's a file copy for these cards and there's two on eBay now for two characters, Blade and Black Goliath.
You said black and I got excited then.
I would tell you, it would already been sent to you. but I know there's been a Surfer for sure. So yeah, those exist, which are really cool, but it has to be 1960 something. I think that's 1968, or like Ian said, that's probably the earliest we go.
Yeah.
Actually, when does, for Star Wars, how early do you guys go?
77 is when Topps puts out series one. That's the blue one. And then they did four additional series. There was the red, yellow, green, and then the orange one, actually. And they were all like 66 cards in there. I think there were maybe a dozen stickers per. And then, five series on that. And then, of course, nothing until... Well, there was the Wonder Bread cards, if you see on the Instagram.
Oh, I heard you talking about those. Yeah, yeah.
And there were some other properties. There is a really awesome Instagrammer and YouTuber, Waxpackin, who reminded me that there were Battlestar Galactica Wonder Bread cards as well, where basically they stuck the card in a loaf of bread. There was no protection for the card. and Topps didn't, you know, and Topps didn't put their names on their original sets, as I caught myself later saying. But yeah, these ones, you couldn't really tell it was Topps. But yeah, they did like 16 cards. There was a few typos in it. Millennium Falcon was misspelled. But yeah, so that was about it. And then you might find a promo card here or there until you get to Empire Strikes Back, where there were the Burger King cards and so forth. Yeah. So yeah, you have, and it sounds similar, you have these one-off promos here or there until you get into, and it's funny that, you know, when you're talking about the Marvel premiere 92 or 93 or some of these, where we all know our card history, card and comic history, you're coming into the late 80s, early 90s, where they couldn't make enough of these.
Yeah.
And everybody was burning cards and comics like they were going out of style. And of course, that was just not sustainable. Mm-hmm. But it is something to where, you know, even Topps getting back into the game in 93 with the Galaxy series, which were all artist based. And, you know, so that kind of coincides with your Marvel premieres of that time. So it's interesting that everybody was just like, we need to get product out. And that's probably where a lot of you guys kind of start getting your ins as far as like, oh, regular cards and things like that. Or even if you're telling, I've heard you guys talk about people going back after those particular cards.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what ends up happening. I think, I mean, most of the collectors I spoke to, and I don't know if this is the same thing for you, Ian, but they're always 90s kids. You know what I mean? Or did this in the 90s, or like we're at the mall and they saw the packs, you know? Like, I think that was the thing that got all of us. I think all of us collectors now are those primary collectors.
I think the interesting thing is a lot of the artists that we're speaking to have a similar kind of thing going on as well. You've obviously got the slightly older artists who are the primary artists, so who are already established or, you know, fairly young guys when the 90s was happening. So people like Joe Jusco was already very well established as a painter and a creator. Dave DeVries, who very kindly came onto our podcast. For those who listen to the Rebel Base Card on a regular basis, that will mean nothing.
It's a horrible inside joke. Sorry.
It is. Sorry, I've got to remember what episode of the podcast we're on here. When he came on, he was fairly not long kind of graduated, I think. He was a young guy when he did that Marvel Masterpieces 95, as were a lot of those other artists. And now, but now a lot of the sketch card artists we're speaking to, not exclusively, but a lot of the ones we've engaged with are sort of 30s, 40s. Some of them, you know, are a bit older than that, and some of them are very young indeed, and indeed won't remember the young ones even. It pains me that there are people in my office, and Greg, you may have this as well, when I asked them about the young ones, and I did this not long back, actually, and they just blink at me, and they don't even know what the reference is. So which is a real shame, because if anyone's not seen the BBC television series The Young Ones from the 1980s, you are absolutely missing out. I actually can't remember what the original question was. answered it. I can't remember.
One thing I did want to ask was how old is the Facebook group?
There's two. I started Marvel Global Fans as it was in April 18. Sorry, I've lost a decade somewhere along the way. And it's now called Marvel Card Collectors Worldwide. And that one is largely for all the Marvel cards, regardless of the series. And then I started one in July of 2018 called Marvel Masterpieces Collectors, which was specifically for the Marvel Masterpieces brand of Marvel trading cards, of which there have now been 10 sets. So there's actually two groups. And then the podcast came along, and then all of a sudden we've got lots of acronyms and lots of things. So we umbrella call them the Marvel Cards Fan Collective.
What was the impetus to break off the main group into a second one?
There wasn't it wasn't kind of thought of as breaking off as a second one. I just saw an opportunity because Marvel Masterpieces is probably the one that's nearest and dearest to my heart. And I would say I'm still very much learning about card sets that came out in the 90s, of which there are a lot, and even the noughties, of which there were an equal large number in the latter half of that decade, with Rittenhouse gearing up into production, putting out up to 3 sets a year at one point. But the Marvel Masterpieces 2018 set was due to come out in the autumn or fall of 2018, and I kind of thought, well, you know what, let's start it. And actually, setting up that group helped the original group no end, because there are a lot of I'll cut to the chase. On day one, when I launched Marvel Masterpieces Collectors, Dave DeVries, who was one of the four primary artists on Marvel Masterpieces 95, an exceptional artist, awesome, and a very, very, very nice man, came on board. And because he was friends on Facebook with Joe Jusco, Julie Bell, Boris Vallejo, all these
the
other guys,
names in
he
the,
basically
in the Marvel
invited
card group,
all those artists to join the group on day one, and it just snowballed. So very quickly that overtook the original group. And then Marvel Masterpieces came out. It was very, very hot. And it actually drew people in who then, once Marvel Masterpieces kind of came out, they wanted to talk about the next sets and the next cards. And then they kind of moved like a shoal of fish, I guess, over to the Marvel Card Collectors Worldwide group, which is a group that now, the whole ethos of them was that it would be a place where you could trade cards and sell cards globally. You weren't restricted, as in, I didn't want there to be any restrictions on people selling and trading cross-border. So that is one of the things, group. If you want to post a card, you have to do it cross-border, because I'm in the UK. We have guys in the group who are in New Zealand, Australia, in the Netherlands, in Canada, in South America, in different parts of Europe, some guys over Indonesia, and they, my goodness, they've got very vibrant Marvel cards community over there. So there's literally people from all over the world, which is brilliant. But the other interesting thing is that some of the Marvel card groups don't allow artists necessarily to be either in there, or if they are, they don't allow them to kind of pimp their wares, if you like, you know, just to advertise for commissions and things like that. So so we wanted the artist to be able to be there amongst the collectors, and for there to be this kind of a symbiotic relationship where it was very respectful, because it's the easiest thing about the internet is that you can be rude to anyone and not suffer any consequences, which I think is one of the curses of the modern age that we're in.
And I think that was the biggest.
And we're pretty, we're fair, but we don't allow fires to start. And if they do, we put them out pretty quickly. And some areas of collecting and of the hobby, and where people hang out and share online, that doesn't happen. You know, it isn't moderated as well, and you know, people get bent out of shape. And I just don't think, you know, it's in such a small hobby, you can't afford to do that. So it's a really long way of saying April 2018. That's why the second group came in, and I'm waffling.
Well, no, I would say that, you know, I've seen different Facebook groups for, you know, Star Wars collecting and others. And I think it is this balance between, it is great that it does grow organically, people are sharing, but it can get elevated pretty fast if you're not on top of it. But I do think that having that mix of artists and collectors in there probably keeps it at a fairly nice keel. And I think it has to be a boon for the artists as well, because, you know, commissions can a lot of times be bread and butter for them.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that was the big thing. Yeah, you know, the crazy part about this, like, you know, Ian made the groups, and I just came in a little bit later because I was hunting for surfer stuff, and I was just, you know, it really brings people who are looking for one of ones. It brings people who are looking for printing plates. It brings people who can't find these really rare cards unless they find the people who own them. And you know, when I finally got into the group, I realized very quickly that the most magical thing about the group for me is not only the friendships I've made, but the other thing is, you have the artists of the original artwork. Exactly. You know, like we've gotten, I mean, as crazy as this is for anybody who collects Marvel trading cards, Joe Jusco went into our group on Facebook and posted all of his preliminary sketches for the Marvel Masterpiece set.
Wow.
Like, that's a huge, enormous thing to happen for a collector, right? To have an artist who is the name of Marvel Masterpieces.
And he only posted them there.
Only posted them. He didn't use comic art fans.
They were... Yeah, I know that he was doing some work at his home because I'm friends with him on Facebook, and I think he was just having a clear out and tidy up, and he found these, and he thought, you know what, I'm going to offer these to the guys in the group. And yes, he probably could have got. I don't want to speak on his behalf, but my assumption is I think he probably could have got more if he sold them elsewhere. But obviously, that place might have taken a commission. And he thought, you know what, these guys are really passionate. Yeah.
It took 30-40 minutes for it to all be gone. Like, and I'm talking 30-40 pieces. It was gone. Like, people picked everything up. And, you know, I think a lot of artists like Simone Bianchi, who's another really famous comic book artist, you know, another one who's like, let me show these people here first what I have available. And that for me is, how else do you, as a collector, do you have a direct line to the source? You know, because it's not going to be from the company. Like, Topps is... really interesting. Like, I love, and I don't want to bridge into the conversation already, but you know, those trailer set cards that you was talking about before, those are really cool looking. You know what I mean? Those are amazing. Like, I'm gonna pick up the Mandalorian one on eBay if I can find a set or whatever. Which I'm excited about. But you know, I think getting as close to the artist like we hopefully will do more of has really been the really cool thing about the group. My sole purpose of like having the group be the way it is so that artists and collectors can do this symbiotic type of thing where we're kind of feeding off of each other, especially when it comes to like sketch card commissions.
What I really enjoy about the is I'm not fully caught up on your podcast, Greg. I'm trying to get through the back. It's a fairly small back catalog, but I'm trying to get through it in amongst all the other West Wing Weekly, Tell 'em Steve Dave, and ID10T with Chris Hardwick podcasts that I've got queued up. So as well as listening to ours about three times a week during the editing process. So as we mentioned on part one of this, but I'll say it again here just in case people haven't caught that yet, is that as a result of your podcast, I've made my first purchase from the Topps website of that Rise of Skywalker trailer 2 set. And the reason that's a dangerous thing for me, because I'll tell you what tempts me is that blue border, that Starfield blue border.
Yeah, so cool.
And so I know, for example, that's been done on a number of times where Topps have put out sets that pay homage to that design and keep that consistency. So I'm eyeing up currently Star Wars Heritage, I believe it was, which there's a UK seller who's got the full base set of that, and it just looks really nice. And,
I just recently, a friend of mine sent me a nearly complete set, and you're gonna get templates from across the original trilogy cards, and it's a nice set.
Yeah. Wow. So I saw you post that, and I went straight to eBay. So, in as much as we're responsible for your Adrian Edmondson obsession, I don't know about Norrin, because there's no Silver Surfer in Star Wars, but
but there is a Boba Fett who is my boy. And I'm so excited about the Mandalorian. You have no idea. So I am very much looking for autos. I have actually a Sabine and a Boba Fett sketch cards. Nice. that I really like, which I'll share. But I'm in it. You got me.
who wants to take credit for starting the podcast, or at least getting the idea out there?
Ian.
I suggested it to you the start of the year, I think.
Yeah,
I was just brainstorming a list of things I wanted to do. And I threw it over to Norrin, and I was like, right, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this. I mean, we've not produced them, but we do have T-shirts. The logo's there, design's done. They just need to be produced. But, of course, you know, we haven't done that yet, which is something I wanted to ask you, actually, Greg, but I'll come back to that in a minute. So podcast, I actually want I've wanted to start a podcast since about 2013, 2014. Mm. And this still may happen. I don't know. But I had an idea for one based on Marvel Comics and kind of venturing into cards as well, that was going to be called Sense Copy. And the reason being is because in the UK, there's all those comics that were printed in the 60s and 70s up to, I can't remember now, but anyway, up till a certain point in the 70s, were printed with what you guys saw on the newsstands in America. But also there was about 5-10% of the print run were printed in UK market pence copies. So and all they did was stop the printing press and swap out the plate in the top left corner where you had the price and put in like 10D as it was in the pre-decimalization currency, and then it went to 12p or whatever it was, and some people in the UK especially regard, there's a furious debate about this as to whether pence copies or cents copies are more desirable. And actually, they were printed at exactly the same time in exactly the same factory.
Really?
But wow. I personally, because comics, Marvel Comics from here are Americana, they have to have the cents pricing on. I won't have a pence copy in my collection. So anyway, that's why the podcast was going to be called Sense Copy. And
that's really cool.
I never got it.
I like that a lot.
And Norman and I have been bouncing ideas around about possibly doing just an episode and just seeing how we go with it about Angel, the TV series Angel.
Yeah. Because non-sport, I mean, as you know, Greg, non-sport is like so broad. Like we cover, you know, Star Wars and Marvel, they're the biggest IPs, but non-sport gets so specific. And these shows that like came and went, and there's such a fan base and cult following type of stuff. So we've been kind of interested in tossing ideas about like watching a series, talking about a card set, or like watching a pilot or, you know what I mean? Something fun like that.
Yeah.
Just because non-sport is such a big genre of card.
Exactly. Huge. But yeah, and I think the smaller IPs do get kind of gobbled up in the conversation when you're talking about Star Wars or Tops. And I think to a certain extent, you could throw the Doctor Who cards in there from Tops.
Yeah.
The WWE type ones. And so, I mean, it's non-sport. It depends on what you would debate about that. But, you know, the Walking Dead ones. And so, yeah, it is something to where there are, you have to imagine there are collectors, there are serious collectors that go after this stuff. But that, you know, their universe is just a little smaller because everything else sort of eclipses it. But yeah, what have you found to been the reactions from your group to the podcast?
Positive, really.
Positive,
I mean,
yeah, very positive. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think here's the weird part, right? I think the podcast has worked in two ways. I don't know if you probably has more numbers on this than I do, but it feels like the podcast reaches the people who are not interested in being on social media.
Hmm. Yes.
Yeah, funny enough, like we were talking about before, but just to reiterate, there's something we call black hole collectors, which are collectors who just don't exist or have an online presence, but they have things that are just drool worthy and so hard to find and so rare that, you know, you kind of want to touch base with them and want to be like, how are you doing? Like, you know, what's going on, you know? And really great people, too. Really great people. Just they don't, you know, I mean, honestly, if it wasn't for this podcast and Ian, I wouldn't be on social media. Like, if I wasn't hunting for things, this would not be part of my daily routine. But, you know, those collectors do listen to podcasts. And podcasts are something they do on their daily commute and the things that they do when they go to work or they feel like, you know, they want to, you know, something they're into. So the show has really reached them specifically. So luckily, you know, they kind of speak to us and hit us up and we can make larger connections, which has been, for me, that's been at least my experience with the podcast so far.
Yeah. And we're finding that people on the Upper Deck EPAX platforms, when I trade with people, if there's a window to start a conversation or leave a comment, I'll mention it to them and they haven't heard of it. But I think I mentioned it on a previous episode of our podcast. Someone reached out to me on EPAX and said, "Oh, just wanted to say hi. I listen to the podcast and I've just joined EPAX and I'm not on Facebook, but like, you know, I've started to, you know, get back into things, and just ask me a few bits of advice and a few questions. So, and, you know, hats off to him. He's right. off making his own journey into Marvel cards, and hopefully he'll check in with us again and tell us where he's at. So, and you know, that's huge for me, because, you know, the more people who come into, you know, there are millions and millions and millions of Marvel fans. There are millions and millions and millions of Star Wars fans. So if some of those guys, some of those guys and girls, who maybe, you know, just get into the, you know, the age where they're coming into their own, you know, late teens, early 20s, who might not know about all these sets that us old farts know very, very well indeed, because, you know, they were when we were children. You know, for a lot of the guys coming up now, you know, the Marvel Universe movies are and were their childhood,
right?
And they might not know that this hobby exists. So if the podcast reaches some of those guys who, you know, I mean, the whole the old joke is on in the marketing agency where I work, is that a lot of kids aren't on Facebook anymore because their parents are all there.
Right.
So they're somewhere else. So, you know, the group is on Facebook because I copied, not copied, but I a lot of the ideas for how the group went and how it was set up and some of the rules came from retro video gaming groups that I was a member of on Facebook. Nice. And so I kind of thought, well, rather than reinvent the wheel, I'll just take some of the best elements of their best practice for managing that very, very passionate but very niche community.
Also, that's where the artists are. I mean, like, Facebook is the space where the artists are,
and Instagram,
you know, so it only made logical sense that there is an existing space there. But yeah, it's really primarily where you're going to be able to see, like, the original work, or you're going to be able to see, like, a sketch or hear the stories. Like, on the podcast, you know, when we have artists, which I know yours does too, hearing people's reasoning for drawing things certain ways or what they are thinking about for a certain piece and stuff like that is really cool. You know, it's really cool. You're not going to get a Blu-ray DVD bonus feature from this hobby. You know, it does not exist. And the podcast is kind of that glimpse into behind the veil, behind the curtain, where you can actually kind of experience and be like, oh, wow, this is an artwork I've already liked. And I just figured out that Dave DeVries put ears on the Silver Surfer. And, like, that's really cool. You know what I mean? Like, this, as small and as funny as that is, it's kind of like, oh, wow, I never would have known that unless there was this medium that was supplying this really cool, obscure information that otherwise would never get out.
Exactly, exactly. Ian, just really fast, I know that you have mentioned the EPAX from Upper Deck. My listeners may not know some of the mechanics. You know, if they're following me along, we know we have the physical product and we have the Topps Star Wars, you know, card trader. But can you kind of explain how EPAX work and the relationship to digital and physical?
Yeah, sure. So EPAX is basically Upper Deck's distribution platform. So they are now holding back physical product to release on EPAX. A good example of this is Marvel Masterpieces 2018. We believe, we don't know for sure, that half of the product went out physically on October 31st, 2018, and the rest of the physical product was kept for sale and release on the EPAX platform in the spring of 2019. It sold out in 11 days. So that is a platform where you can buy the cards, where you can trade the cards instantly. You can either leave them open or lock them so that no one else on the platform can see them. And you can have them shipped to you at any point. You can have them either shipped directly from the EPAX platform or in partnership with ComC, Check Out My Collection, who I believe fulfill all that physical management for Upper Deck. And so I believe they share the same warehouse facilities. There are some sets that release cards on there that may have already had a hobby release in stores. Marvel Annual is a prime example. And Marvel Annual has base cards 1 to 100. But when you move over to EPAX and for the release of that base 1 to 100 are digital cards. And you have to combine 10 copies of that digital card to get a color wheel variant that is a physical card.
Oh, wow.
So the only place I can get the base card of Marvel Annual 1-100 is from a physical box.
Yeah.
I can get it on EPAX, but it doesn't exist as a physical card. But I can combine 10 of that digital version to get a card that is an exclusive card to the EPAX platform. So what I find really interesting is that you have this, you have these exclusives now where you'll have some cards that you can only get out of hobby boxes and some cards you can only get off EPAX. So Upper Deck are doing a really good job of knitting that together. So to get the full, if you're going after the full set, you have to invest in both worlds. Hmm. And ultimately it's the investment part and the fact that, you know, they want to sell more product.
Right.
They make more money. So hats off to them. But it works really well.
Do you have them? Are you able to get them shipped to you in the UK, or do you have to kind of use your intermediary?
I can do if I go through COMC. So if I move them into COMC, the licensing that it makes it very, very clear whenever you do anything on EPAX that whenever you do a trade, whenever you buy a product, you get a pop-up screen that's a legality that says, physical Marvel cards can only be shipped to the following territories, and it gives a list of the ones that Upper Deck have the license to sell cards in, and the UK isn't one of those. So no, I couldn't go onto the Upper Deck store and have something shipped directly to the UK because they're not allowed to do that under the terms of their license. And the same goes if I extract anything from EPAX and have it shipped to me. However, I can transfer it from EPAX to COMC, and those systems are interconnected, but COMC are not the people who have the Marvel license. They just facilitate the movement of all this physical product. So I can have it shipped from COMC to the UK if I wanted to, but that is really expensive. Their shipping isn't cheap, so it's actually cheaper to get it shipped to a fellow collector in the US and then have them forward it.
And that really makes the groups that more valuable, because if you can find somebody in the States to move things back and forth, or at least to mail it to you, then you know, then you're not restricted in like, well, I'm not even going to bother chasing this because how am I ever going to get it here? I can't get here that expensive. So it is nice to where you go, maybe I can just, you know, if you find a really good friend, you go, I'm going to send you a couple of boxes of this, and then we'll either figure out how to get it sent over, or if I come on holiday, I can come over and just collect it then.
Well, I am actually. the family and I are going to Boston and New Hampshire for Christmas. We're in the US from like the 22nd of December through to the 31st of December. So I'm planning to be picking up a few things, getting shipped to our friends in New Hampshire that will be staying with us, including the original art piece that Joe Jusko has sent to my buddy Norrin here, is in his closet of dreams. But Greg, once we're off air, you can't do this on air, drop me your address and I'll hook you up with one of the UK release Journey to the Rise of Skywalker starter packs.
That'd be nice. I have one thing you also can't get in the US, which I was able to get off eBay. I got a couple of the top Star Wars Attacks starter sets that came with the binder you were discussing before. It's like a thinner binder, some sheets, and then it had a pack, and then there was a exclusive card to that. We have some of the Attacks games, but for whatever reason, the UK only has the license for Star Wars to do it over there.
Wow. Is that the ATTAX?
Yes.
It's the collectible card game one, yeah?
Yeah, it is something to where it's been on my back burner for a long time, and I do have a couple of the... They're still sealed, like as if you were getting it off a newsstand. So it has the plastic shrink-wrapped cover, and there's a card inside of it. I just haven't quite figured out. I like the binders, and I don't think they make... Topps doesn't do a ton of binders for Star Wars. They have, but you can't find them plentiful as you can. But
welcome to our world. Upper Deck can't binders at all.
Yeah. I'm like on the verge of making of making one or whatever the case may be. But yeah, I wish there were more things. Upper Deck did come out with something that was pretty cool for the 2018 Marvel Masterpiece set.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's a lithogram, right, Ian? Or is it the actual It's a lithogram of selected cards from the set, and I forget how big it is, but it's not particularly large, but it's nice and organized, and it's beautifully done, and there's a low print run on it. So they're starting to do stuff, so it's pretty cool to see. Yeah, but they're signed by Simone.
Simone Bianchi.
Nice.
Yeah,
it was the artist.
So it's pretty fun. Yeah,
and I don't know. The interesting thing is it's not the full set. and he did 130, I believe, original paintings for that set.
Yeah.
Took him best part of 2 years to do. Mm-hmm. And he, so I'm not sure how they're chosen. It may well be that he chose them themselves. If
possibly.
If it was some sort of artist select thing, I mean, that would be a really good hook.
That would be really cool.
Maybe that is it. But yeah, no, those are available. So it's nice that they do some complimentary products for the card
set. They're
starting. But they don't make binders.
Mm-hmm. No.
What's the next big set that's coming out for Marvel?
So there's a lot of speculating going on right now. I don't know how. See, the big set, it matter. The way you know it's like a big set, like the definition for a big set would be rarity and the tier system and the serial number of cards, like how many cards exist, the premium set. So that's really, I know everyone's talking about Marvel Masterpiece 2020 and who the artists will that be. I think you'll see a huge spike in Marvel card collecting when that's announced, because it's very much on a hype train right now. We had really two great sets, which was Joe Jusco and the Simone Biachi, follow each other. So I think people are really excited to see who the next artist is for the new set. But close, recent, it's probably going to be the 80th. Is that right, Ian?
Yeah, there's Upper Deck have already announced. And they've announced Marvel Endgame and Captain Marvel are going to be one set. Mm-hmm. For whatever reasons, I don't know. But that's coming out early in 2020. You've also got Marvel 80th anniversary, which I believe will be 2020 now. They haven't officially announced that, but we know it's coming because there were some artists
leaks
who got a bit excited and posted pictures online, and they were very swiftly taken down, but not before we saw them. Beyond that, for next year, it's kind of a bit thin at the moment. They haven't announced an awful lot. However, there's always that gap between physical release and when it goes onto e-packs, which is kind of reminds me of when a movie used to come out of the cinema, then you had a 3 or 4 month period before it came out on home video. I don't remember the days when it was like a 6 month thing. Now it's almost instantaneous. But that still happens. So we've had Marvel Flare earlier this year, which still hasn't come out on e-packs. We've had Marvel Premiere also still to come out on e-packs. So there is still kind of a second life for those sets when they get released onto the digital platform. And we know that artists do a second wave of sketch cards, so that they've got artists who may have been in the physical release who do more sketch cards for the e-packs release, or some artists who are exclusive to the e-packs release.
Nice.
So especially for those sketch collectors, it's kind of a double, you know, Upper Deck get two bites of the apple for that set coming out. But yeah, in terms of big sets, Mark, you know, Upper Deck have been doing those kind of retro style sets, so resurrecting the 90s brands, obviously Marvel Masterpieces being the most notable one. But they did a FLIR Ultra Spider-Man set in 2017 and a FLIR Ultra X-Men set in 2018. Marvel Flare was the kind of retro set for 2019. So what it will be for next year, I don't know. But I'd put good money that Marvel Universe will make an appearance. Mm.
That would be pretty crazy. That would be pretty fun to see Marvel Universe pop up.
It'll be a vast set.
And who's on your wish list for the podcast?
Oh, here is... Well, obviously, Greg, you're good self. But beyond that, I'm always happy if Norrin turns up. beyond that, well, listen, I would love... What I would really love is to have some of the guys from Upper Deck and Rittenhouse come on and tell us more about some of the stories as to how some of the card sets came about, the design of them, you know, the challenges that go into this. We'd love to get more physical dealers who deal with physical product in, because I think EPACS is good and it's great and it's dominant. But much as I love that, I still want the guys who get boxes and sell them at cons and sell them at stalls and have their own.
Yeah.
You know, I see them as a vital part of the hobby, and I wouldn't want to see them disappear. And there's a couple of guys like that. In terms of artists, obviously I'd love to have Joe just go on the podcast, but It's not for everyone being on a podcast, so I don't know if he'll ever want to do so. There's other guys that we'd love to talk to. We've been talking to Tom Fleming about coming on the podcast, who's an artist who was on a number of the fully painted sets from the 90s and more recently. So the way we can't, it's difficult, as you know, Greg, because you know, we all work for a living, you know, finding the time to do these and actually get them in is one thing. We've got the added element of time zones to take into account, me being in the UK and Norin being East Coast. So it's difficult to actually schedule them in. So the way we kind of get around it, at least in the short term, is to having that different flavor and those artist voices on the podcast and being able to just at least talk about them and promote them and help them help us and help us help them by having the artist intros on our podcasts. So that is kind of the way that we're doing it at the moment. But yeah, we want to have more interviews. We want to have more long form interviews and do more of that. But as ever, it's just time.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And I know that's got to be, you know, something everybody keeps an eye on as well. So I did want to say that you beat me completely to the punch as far as getting the artist intros, because as soon as I heard the first one, I kind of was at sort of a smack my head moment going, I've been talking to these folks for an hour. Why couldn't I have had them said something? And,
I stole that from somewhere else. Most of my ideas I steal from people, to be fair.
The best ideas are stolen.
Someone once said to me, and I always remember this quote, we live in a magpie culture. Nothing we consume is new or original, which may or may not be true, but it's the phrase magpie culture. And I'm a big fan of the Kevin Smith podcasts and that kind of universe that he's built up there. And one of the ones that they used to do was called Puck Nuts, and it was about hockey. And at the beginning of the episodes, they'd get one of the players. Just to say, you know, they'd collar them at a signing or a meet and greet or something, and just have them saying to the mic, "Oh, this is such and such," and you're listening to Pucknuts. So that's where I stole that from.
That's good.
It's brilliant, brilliant. How can people find this podcast and your group?
The easiest way is to go on to Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and we are at the MCC pod. We also have two groups on Facebook, Marvel Car Collectors Worldwide, and you can find that by searching MCCW or Marvel Masterpieces Collectors, which is MMC. So you just pop either of those into the search bar of Facebook and it will take you straight to us.
Excellent, excellent. I know that I know that we need to get you out of the loft and Norin on with his weekend. This was quite the event. I think we can all rest easy once these are posted and up. And that's it's not a podcast until it's posted. It's just raw audio. But I thought this was a lot of fun, and
this has been great. Let's do this again.
We will have to. I think we are sister podcasts in not only an anchor, but also we're talking about the same things. It's what do you collect, why, and how much you love it. I really love the passion that you guys put into it, and you can hear it, and you guys work really well together. I really hope you guys are able to do this as long as you want to.
I'm sure we will. Thank you so much, brother.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Once again, my thanks to Ian Taylor and Norin Rad for being on the program tonight. It was a pleasure to get a chance to talk with them and learn more about the Marvel Card Collectors podcast. Definitely check that podcast out or on their Facebook group. If you have any feedback for tonight's episode, good, bad, or otherwise, you can leave a comment on the Instagram post for this episode or DM me on Instagram at RebelBaseCard. You can send me an email at greg@rebelbasecard.com. You can also find me now on Facebook. Definitely give that page a little love. It could use it. You can also find me on Twitter at CornFedTech. Sorry, it was the old Twitter handle. I just decided to keep it. Please, if you want to, give me a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. That kind of gets the word out about it. If you are a sketch card artist or Star Wars collector and would like to come on the podcast to talk about your artwork, your passions, or your stuff,
shoot me in a communication at what I just talked about, and maybe we can set something up. Otherwise, we'll talk to you next time.
The music for this podcast is brought to you under a Creative Commons license from Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails. This is Discipline off the album The Slip. This podcast is not affiliated in any way with Topps, Disney, or Star Wars, nor is it endorsed by Disney or Lucasfilm, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All names and sounds and any other related items are properties of their respective trademarks and or copyright holders here in the U.S. and abroad. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com.